Wait, time out.
How did I do on the spot with that?
Natalie, you were muted again, I think, when you tried to say
Natalie,
something.
stop muting yourself.
This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not so good, and the continuous opportunity for high-quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state.
And here are those three distinguished instructors now. Hey,
Hello.
Y'all. How's it going?
Good. How are you, Lance?
Doing awesome. Natalie?
I'm great. Sorry I interrupted you there.
It's all good. And you know what? We are in the thick of it. I feel like yesterday was just back to school mode. In fact, our very previous episode, we were diving deep into back to school. And somehow today, as we record, we're already at the 6 week mark. How did that happen?
Oh, I don't know. I feel the opposite. I feel like this year is already like 4 months in. It feels long to me. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but yeah.
I always say that every year feels like it goes by faster than the year before. And that's one of the ways that people can be in the profession, in the career for as long as they are, because it just flies by. I mean, as soon as you are there and you hit the ground running in August, you don't stop till June. And it's kind of like a whirlwind. So here we
That's
go.
The truth.
I envy that feeling.
That's the truth. And I think we're sending out some report cards in a couple weeks. So parents, be on the lookout for those coming into your students' hands and potentially in your mailboxes. How are y'all semesters going so far? Is everything going well? Any funny stories or things going on with your students?
You just reminded me that I need to do grading tonight. But
oh, no, I'm sorry. Not on a Sunday, Matthew.
I've got a pile of papers sitting on my desk in my office. So, yeah, I'm teaching this new advanced speech and debate class, which is really interesting. Talk about that probably a little bit later in the episode. Really good students. And we were just at Bowie High School. Bowie is the neighboring school. It's our feeder high school. And so I took some of the kids over there to give them a feel of what it's going to be like when they compete in October. And some of the parents came along too. They wanted to see it. They wanted to help out chaperone and everything. And that was really cool. But we went into some of the debates that were going on, and they last for about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour. And we stepped out of the first one, and I asked everybody what they thought. And one parent just looked at me with these wide eyes, and she said, I maybe understood about, you know, an eighth of what they were talking about. It was so sort of intense and fast and, you know, all of this debate jargon. And I thought that was really, really funny. And she had no idea what we're getting into. Yeah.
Sounds like it was a great experience for your students.
It was good. It was good. Yeah, they liked it.
That's awesome. Well, I am closing out last week and entering this new one with an attitude of gratitude for sure. And
great phrase. Great phrase.
Sort of in my quest to inspire that in others. You know, we talk a lot about the inner workings of what we do in schools and in education in general. But one of the things that maybe we haven't touched on a ton is how we influence kids and impact just the way that they are, the way that they function in a space, in an organization, in a group of other people. And so this week at lunch duty, I have seventh grade lunch duty this year. And our campus numbers have gone down a little bit, sort of in that ebb and flow, you know, of the transient nature of student populations in older schools, because the campus that I work at is in an older, more established neighborhood. There's a lot of retirees. So we don't have like a ton of young families moving in this area. Other parts of the city are booming. And so that's concerning on some levels when you see numbers go down. But of course, we know that that will eventually flow again, and we'll see those numbers change
sure.
as things are updated. But the benefit to having, I think, a smaller organization is that it gives you the opportunity to implement some really valuable things in terms of creating a good, positive campus culture. And so all of that is for me to come to the point of This past week during lunch duty on Wednesday, I took the opportunity to kind of lead the seventh graders in thanking our cafeteria staff as one big, you know, shout out to them. And then another day we did that with the custodial staff and then wishing, you know, the kids luck on their game days. It was like football Wednesday, volleyball Thursday, cross country Saturday. You know, so just to kind of like create this culture of recognizing each other and appreciating each other and rooting each other on. And I think the kids responded really well. And I think the adults took notice too, because I heard them doing it at eighth grade lunch, even though I'm not in there. So
there you go. Influence that you have on that school. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love that. And you know what? I'm going to express some gratitude as well. I think teachers love to complain, and we can definitely get into the weeds on some complaints here and there, but I have very little to complain about this year. The school year's been going great. The systems are organized. And one of the key initiatives that we took as a staff this year was to just kind of make campus life more interesting, enjoyable, and fun for our students in particular. So there's been multiple socials already, even here in the end of September, beginning of October. We had an amazing social for our senior class. We only graduate about 100 to 120 seniors every year. We're pretty small. But it was a 6 a.m. seniors come to our campus to watch the sunrise event. And I think about 80% of them were there. The turnout was incredible. We had donuts and coffee for them. And to see 80 plus of our seniors getting up and coming to the campus at 6 a.m. To bond, you know, in their those final months together as a senior class, which, you know, is such an important group or cohort that you're a part of in your life. It was just really cool. And then last Wednesday, the same day that you were thanking your cafeteria staff, we had Natalie, we had paletas on the patio, which was just a PTSA provided them. And there was a swarm of high school students on the back patio after school enjoying popsicles and just and the weather, and it was great. So that's what I'm thankful
that's
for.
That's
really
cool.
Yeah. And you know what? We do love to talk about our jobs. We love talking about them, but I will also say that we love a good break. Do y'all agree with that?
Who does? 100%.
Of course. Not in that like countdown to summer vacation sort of way, because the work is the best part about what we do, but simply sometimes having a break, having that day or two ability to recharge away from the building can make us more locked in and more engaged with our students and more, you know, able to serve them, which is the job. Here in Dallas, we've got a 5-day student holiday coming up in October in honor of the state fair.
Lucky.
Yeah, I know. That's the benefit of having a school just a stone's throw away from the state fair. But actually, we've got another one coming up in November, in the first week. In fact, this week, I was refining my instructional calendar, looking at the lessons I have coming up in that stretch before Thanksgiving, and I noticed a student holiday on November the 5th. Also, it's a holiday for the teachers. November the 5th. What could be special about that
date? What's on November the 5th? Is that a national holiday? What's going on?
We
have
something.
That off as well.
It's just a Tuesday, right?
Yeah. Well, of course, November 5th is noteworthy because there will be a pretty consequential presidential election this year. So I heard you mention this a second ago, Matthew. What about y'all's districts? Do you have election day off?
This year we do. And I can't remember if we had it off the last election, but I don't think we did.
We never had it off before in my district. In the last couple of years, they have transitioned to a student holiday, but staff work day. So it gives adults on the campus the opportunity to go exercise their civic duty in voting. And so it is a holiday for the kids, but it is not a holiday for us. So you guys are especially privileged in that way.
But at least you'll have a slight amount of flexibility to go vote instead of running home after kids are, you know, leaving your classroom at the end of the day,
definitely.
It sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not here to talk specifically about the election, definitely not the candidates, and certainly not to share our own personal takes on that situation politically. But we did think that here in October would be a good opportunity to share how we address big events, current events, and contemporary noteworthy situations with our students, such as a presidential election. So today we want to go through three ways that current events affect our jobs as teachers and our lives. First, we're going to talk about some specific memories that we might have from our over a decade in the classroom or in schools. Then we're going to share out about specific tangible policies that districts like ours have when it comes to discussing these events with students to maybe provide some reassurance for some parents that might have some questions. And then finally, we're going to talk about how we talk about ideological topics in the classroom. That's what we're here to do today. But let's start with specific memories. Do either of you, Natalie, Matthew, have any specific memories from big events in the classroom? We'll start with you, Matthew.
Yeah, I'll never forget the day after the election in 2016. This, of course, was with Trump and Clinton. But at the school that I taught at, which was a charter school in East Austin, it was memorable. There were a lot of kids who needed to be pulled out of classes. There were a lot of kids kind of crying. There were a lot of kids who were really worried. And we had one student who, we'll call him Jerry. That's not even close to his name. But Jerry had been really following the election and going down these sort of like wormholes of, you know, conspiracy theories and getting like way into the weeds on YouTube and so forth. And had a nervous breakdown on the campus. And we needed to call in support, outside support for him. And it was a really jarring time, for sure. I'd never seen anything quite like it in terms of, a student reaction on a campus that I taught at over something having to do with current events and politics. And yeah, it definitely stands out.
Yeah, definitely. We probably all have had those students that have been really deep in YouTube and their passions and then had it manifest in ways like that. What about you, Natalie?
You know, there's so many that I can think of and recall over the course of my career in terms of being in school as a teacher, even as a student. Like, I remember, you know, being on that side of things when we were in school. But the two I would say more recent that come to mind are probably when the Uvalde shooting happened and also January 6th at the U.S. Capitol. Those were big, heavy, sort of all over the news and the internet when they were happening. And, you know, we are now one-to-one devices, I think, statewide after COVID. And so the kids are seeing all of that too, you know, real time. They're seeing because they're on the internet, like doing their school stuff. And so those two things come to mind in terms of most recent big events. I don't have a specific story to tell about the student reaction to those things, just other than noting the palpable sort of, it was like the elephant in the room, you know, the whole day and then for some days after. And while, you know, some kids were openly discussing it with each other, you know, it was, they were just very somber days. It reminded me much of when I was a student in, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s, when things like that were happening in the real world. Like, as a student, I didn't really understand or grasp everything about that situation. But I just knew that it was significant and it was a big deal. And I was kind of looking to the adults to gauge their response. And so being a teacher in the classroom when these big things are happening, or anybody, you know, on faculty at a school, those things are real and they're sensitive and they're, you know, ways that they're opportunities ultimately for us to come together in community and sort of share a collective response as to how we want things to be better in our space. And so, those are the two big ones that come to mind recently. What about you, Lance?
Yeah, I love that phrase, collective response, because sometimes when these big events are happening, the collective response does sort of take precedence over processing it yourself. Sometimes that individual processing happens later or privately. And so thinking back, just like you, Natalie, to my experience as a student, I'll never forget 9/11, right? I think that's a really big one. I was a ninth grader, so there you now all our audience can figure out how old I am. I was a ninth grader when 9/11 happened, and that was a morning event. And I just remember Miss Griffin, my speech teacher, rolling in one of those boxy TV carts that people of a certain age definitely remember, maybe even viscerally. And us just watching the news that day, kind of like you were saying, Natalie, there was no discussion of the content or the lesson plan that day. It was taking priority. Now that I've been teaching for over a decade and a half, I actually vividly remember the first year when I had high school students that were not alive for 9/11. That was just like a marked transition in my life. I don't know if y'all are that age also.
Yes.
Not
We are.
necessarily.
We're officially at that point of ask your teacher, where were they
Right.
when?
Right. I remember asking my parents where they were, for the Kennedy assassination, and now it's 9/11. The point is that it's less talking about our kids where they were that day and more so sharing our experiences of that day and how important Patriot Day is now. This was just a couple of weeks ago, and I shared this story with my students. Yeah, it kind of colors everything that we do because we can't ignore the events of the world, even when we need to be discussing quadratic functions, right?
Definitely.
That being said, do your districts have any specific policies or measures in place about what can and can't be discussed, maybe politically or similarly in y'all's classrooms? What about down in Austin, Matthew? How's that going?
AISD, it's pretty vague language, to be honest. Teachers can share their political views. You just cannot disseminate any resources to students. But you can't you obviously can't promote a candidate or a political party, but you can share your personal views if you choose to.
I'm not familiar of a formal, but let me rephrase that. I'm not familiar with a formal policy that my district has. There probably is one, but without, having it in front of me, I don't want to misquote or misspeak on behalf of my district. I will say that in the sense of best practice, we are encouraged to address factual information around some major events, timelines, key players, and things like that. But when it comes to the blurry area of opinion, I think it's fair to present an opinion, or in my case, when I was teaching English, high school English at the beginning of my career, and we were utilizing current events as, prompts for persuasive writing. At that time, the goal was to encourage students to identify their opinion. And so presenting, the factual information and then encouraging them to formulate an opinion and then articulate it was the task, whether we agreed with it or not, whether their opinion agreed with our personal opinion. And so I think that that's, for myself, that's my personal policy. I think that's in general sort of a best practice.
No, best practice is a great phrase here because I did look pretty deeply into the Dallas ISD policy on this in the lead up to our recording. And I mean, first of all, let's just acknowledge that schools are very often polling places, and there are
Right.
local and state laws about how close you can be to a campus to, promote a candidate or to electioneer. And that is what I found when I looked at the Dallas ISD policies. Even though voting might be happening at your campus, even in the run-up to a voting period or within a voting period, the key thing that is banned or prohibited for any employee from teacher all the way up the chain is electioneering, right? You're not allowed to advertise for any political candidates. You're not allowed to use the copiers to run off flyers for a
Right.
candidate. You're not allowed to have bumper stickers with, voting for
Oh.
this person or voting for this person. within your classroom or on the back of your computer, but you are allowed. And in fact, there's an entire provision on in the employee handbook about promoting voting, right? Or engagement in political, the political process, or, you know, talking about just that civic responsibility, Natalie, that you mentioned earlier. All of those things are not just allowed, but maybe even tacitly suggested as a best practice for how we talk to students. And so I have no problem saying that voting is an important responsibility to my students. I have to, fortunately, like you said about best practice, draw the line at saying, and I'm voting for blank.
Right.
That would be definitely crossing a line. So let's move into our third point is how we talk to students. That's kind of what I was suggesting there at the end. We have an expert in house this week, Matthew Balter. Let's talk about your credentials because, and I think this is going to be the meat of what we want to share with our listeners today is this central question. How do we talk to kids, right? How do we talk to kids who may or may not have, have ideological differences? I mean, we teach the gamut, right? Or who might have different perspectives or have been in different areas of YouTube the night before. How do we talk to kids about an election or about their beliefs or their values, even when it comes to these big, big, big events? Matthew, hit us with this.
Yeah. So this is kind of what we're, this is my foray right now, right? In speech and debate, at least. So we talk about current events and politics all the time in speech and debate. That's our curriculum. That's what we're competing over are resolutions that have to do with current events. And so this is a major part of the class. And of course, debating sides, taking opinions, formulating arguments, researching, and so forth. But I do want to preface this by saying that I teach an elective class that the students choose. They don't have to take speech and debate. This is something that they sign up for specifically. And I also make it really clear at the beginning of the year, multiple ways to parents that we are going to be talking about current events. We're going to be researching current events. We're going to be arguing about current events. That's a big part of the class. So if any parent is uncomfortable with that, they have the opportunity to reach out to me. If they're still really uncomfortable about it, their child, at the beginning of the year at least, would have the opportunity to choose a different elective. And I haven't had any angry parents call me or email me quite yet.
Yeah, and I think
we'll
that's
that changes.
Really smart, Matthew, because I was talking to our AP government teacher about this earlier this year, and he also necessarily needs to dive headfirst into these issues and these topics in his class, and he got ahead of it. He was proactive. He sent a letter home to parents before the school year even started. This is not a class that kids can get out of. It's a graduation requirement. Mm-hmm. However, parents do still have some power pulling their students out of that class when those kind of conversations are happening. So this is pretty common in schools.
Yeah, right. But I mean, I think like, you know, the great thing about speech and debate, right, or the speech and debate that we're doing, which is we're focused on public forum, is that the way the debate is structured, you have a resolution, a statement, and you are either on the pro side of this resolution or the con side. But you don't know until seconds before the actual debate which side you're going to be on. It's decided by a coin toss. So all of the teams need to look at the resolution from both angles. And what an important skill, right? To be able to see things, see an issue from both sides. The resolution that we're doing right now, that we're working on right now, and that we'll compete over in October is really controversial. And it is resolved the United States federal government should substantially increase its funding in surveillance infrastructure along the southern border. So this is a really big topic. Obviously, both presidential candidates are talking a lot about the southern border and what the U.S. should do or how much it should ramp up security and so forth. And so we're examining this topic, but from both sides. And they're doing research and coming up with arguments as to why this is a good idea and why this is a bad idea. I never, and I really, really, really tried to stay strict about this for myself. I never disclosed to them my own personal thoughts on this topic or any topic that we bring up. Perhaps my students might suspect, you know, I lean toward one side or another, but like I really make a concerted effort to always present a topic or a current event or whatever we're discussing in class from a very, very distant and objective lens. We're using logic in debate. And so, you know, if you, every opinion that you have, you have to defend it with factual information. And so we're spending a lot of time learning those skills. Do kids sometimes bring up their own personal opinions without any sort of logic behind them? Sure, absolutely. They're middle school students. But my job as the facilitator in that class is to really guide their thinking into, yeah, it's great to have opinions. Yes, it's awesome to get behind something, but just make sure that you can look at it from the other side, right? And we talk a lot about what facts are. And yeah, that's, I talked for a while there. I don't know if I answered your question, but that's what we're doing.
No, you've totally just validated my comments of you being the expert in-house. So thanks. Natalie, what is it like at your school?
So yeah, I have a lot to say here. So many thoughts running through my head as I'm listening to Matthew's expertise, and a lot that I can relate to, honestly, because as a parent and as a teacher, I think what's so important is that our kids in schools are learning how to establish and articulate their opinions. Like I was saying earlier, when I touched on the experience I had when I was teaching English. And I also really firmly believe that we meet kids where they are and they tell us in the quality or the nature of their questions, they're telling us how much they're able to process themselves. So I think it's really important not to inundate them with more than they're really able to grasp. And I think it's really important that we are instilling in them the importance of having an opinion and having a way to intellectually express that opinion. So when I was teaching high school and we're doing persuasive writing, and we're talking about Super Tuesday and some of the major platform issues at the time, this was back in, I don't know, 2016, probably, leading up to that election. You know, high schoolers are very aware of what was going on with that election and the hot sort of top tier items on the ballot. And so having that kind of dialogue, you know, a mini debate, if you will, in the classroom to exchange ideas so that kids could then really formulate their own was important. I think once I was teaching art in middle schoolers, like they're aware of what's going on, but you know, mentally, emotionally, they're not there yet. And so rather than, dissecting the issues themselves, my goal was always to encourage them. You know, we would talk about like an artist statement in their work. And so when it comes to major social, cultural, political issues that they are aware of, how can they creatively express their opinion on the matter? Or if nothing else, how it is impacting them in their lives. So that's really key. But at the end of the day, I really think, and I feel so strongly about this, that it's all about encouraging civil discourse, because if there's anything we teach our kids in schools, it's how to disagree with someone. Like in our world, in the adult world that we live in, you know, the divisiveness comes from that break in communication. And I think one of our most powerful and poignant opportunities in a school setting is to really encourage students to explore differing opinions and ideas and how we can constructively disagree and work alongside people who disagree with us toward a common goal and objective. And so I think that you sounds like you're doing a great job of establishing that in your speech and debate classes, Matthew. And I think
you'd have to ask the kids, but yeah.
I'd like to think that many, if not most, teachers see the validity in that, in our role when it comes to, you know, how we're talking about this stuff with kids, what exactly we're talking about, and how we, you know, develop them as good citizens of the world.
Yeah,
I could not agree with you more there, Natalie. That was awesome. Yep.
Yeah, so well said. And kind of just in closing, here's what I'll add. So I do teach math, and I'm not an administrator, so I don't have any sort of organic or germane way in on these conversations with my students. But as a teacher, it is part of my mandate to look out for the well-being of my students. And so after these conversations are happening, maybe formally, like Matthew shared in his classroom, or in sort of more of a civic discourse, respect sort of way that Natalie is facilitating on her campus, it's also important that we remember that students need to take care of themselves, right? And that we prioritize their mental health and well-being when they're in our campus, and hopefully even through our efforts when they leave our campus. So I prioritize things like taking care of yourself. What does it mean if you hear something that you don't like and you get riled up? What are some strategies that you can take to regulate yourself and then come back to the debate? And things of that nature. It's also just best practice for adults in general, right? So in closing, I just want to ask our listeners, how are you taking care of yourselves in this time of polarization, specifically in the run-up to this very consequential election? For me, I remind myself what is and sometimes what isn't within my locus of control, and that helps me process. And then on election day, I'm going to be very, very lucky to have that day off. And Natalie and Matthew, you'll have versions of days off yourself. So where will all of you be on election day? And I hope that it's somewhere safe, comfortable, and that you are having great conversations with the loved ones around you. So until next time, thanks again to listening to All Things Education here with Lance, Natalie, and Matthew. And please follow us on Instagram at All Things Education Podcast. And we would love for you to send us a voice note with your thoughts. We're moving towards a period where we want to validate and promote more of our listeners' thoughts and feedback. And so we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, y'all, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
And if you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.